Thank you, Tom, for the introduction. Let me just share my screen. Okay, and okay. All right, so good morning, good afternoon, good evening, everyone. My name is Yuan Yuan Guo. You can also call me Savannah. I'm currently an assistant professor at the University of Nevada, Reno. I'm very excited to be here, and I thank the conference organizer for giving me this opportunity. So today I'm presenting this work that I co-authored with Xintong Fang, Beilei Mei, and Jianfang Ye from Shanghai University of Finance and Economics. So the paper, the title of our paper is Implementation Cost of IFRS 9 for Non-Financial Firms, Evidence from China. Okay, so as the title of our study suggests, that this paper focuses on IFRS 9 financial instruments. Since the 2008 global financial crisis, there has been a lot of debates about accounting standards for financial instruments. The accounting standard that governed the financial instrument at the time was IAS 39, and it has received a lot of criticism for exacerbating the financial crisis. So in 2014, the IASB replaced IAS 39 with IFRS 9 financial instruments. And following this IFRS update, in 2017, the Chinese Ministry of Finance replaced the original Chinese accounting standards for financial instruments. And in this paper, we refer to that as the original CAS 22, and they replaced it with a new set of CAS 22 with the same name. So what we want you to know, or what is important about the new CAS 22, is that first of all, it is identical to the IFRS 9. Second of all, it take effective for different types of firm at different times. So in early 2018, this new standard took effect for all Chinese firms that are listed both domestically and overseas. And in early 2019, this new standard took effect for all Chinese firms listed domestically. And then only in early 2021, it is effective for some insurance firms. So I'd like to bring to your attention some specific changes related to the new CAS 22 that we find to be of interest to our study. So the first set of interest applies to fair value measurement. So the new CAS 22 requires that a company must measure all equity investments at fair value, and then a company can make an irrevocable election to record an equity investment that is not held for trading as either as fair value through profit and loss, or through fair value, or as a fair value through other comprehensive income, with only the dividend income recorded in the profit and loss. In addition, the new standard also eliminates the cost exception, where cost was previously allowed under the old standard to replace the fair value when there is no quotation in the active market. So the second set of changes applies to this new expected credit loss model. So the original CAS 22 required that companies to use an incurred loss model for impairment, and that allowed companies to delay the recognition of credit losses until there is an objective evidence of impairment. But this new standard uses the expected credit loss model, and it requires companies to recognize expected credit losses every year, even if there is not an actual loss event occurring. So the motivation of our study is both accompanied by what we believe as potential benefits and challenges of these new accounting standards for financial instruments. So the potential benefits, we believe that because compared with the original CAS-22, which relied on determining management's intention to hold the equity investment, the new standard should have a much simpler way of classifying these equity investments. And because of this simplification of the classification process, this should significantly reduce the amount of judgment and discretion involved in the process, and should also further lower audit risk and any potential earnings management through manipulating the earnings equity investment classification. But we also see that there might be some potential challenges associated with the new standard. So first of all, we believe that eliminating the cost exception might create a lot of challenges for measuring the fair value. And particularly in our sample, we estimate close to 95% of firms have some sort of investments in unlisted companies without a quoted price in the active market. So this volume speaks to the difficulty of acquiring a fair value estimate. Second of all, we think that firms might not like either of these fair value options because on the one hand, fair value through profit and loss might create earnings volatility as the fair value fluctuates. On the other hand, any gains or losses on fair value through other comprehensive income other than dividend income cannot be recognized in the company's profit and loss. And this might cause companies to lose a very powerful source of income. In addition, we also believe that estimating the parameters used in the expected credit loss models are going to present a lot of challenges, and it requires a lot of expertise and judgments. So because of all of these issues and potential challenges, we believe that it's going to have a lot of difficulties for companies and auditors as well. So because of my discussion, as a result, the efficacy of the new CAS-22 is still undecided and unclear. And we use, in this paper, we use the new CAS-22 to study IFRS 9, not only because the new CAS-22 is identical to IFRS 9, but also because we believe it presents a cleaner research setting. This is because IFRS 9 took effect at the same time with IFRS 15, and this would make it really difficult to empirically isolate the effect of IFRS 9. But on the other hand, in China, the new CAS-22 is not implemented with any other accounting standards simultaneously, so this should help us to infer causality. So in this paper, we ask this research question, are there implementation costs of IFRS 9 for non-financial firms? First, we focus on the implementation cost because the new standard explicitly mentions that an entity is required to incorporate reasonable and supportable information if obtaining such information does not involve undue cost or effort. So we wanted to see if the new standards bringing any implementation costs, specifically any direct implementation costs that could be reflected in increases in audit fees, and any indirect implementation costs that might arise when companies prematurely dispose their equity investments. And also related to our research question, we focus on non-financial firms specifically in this paper because we believe that the new standards might have different impacts on financial versus non-financial companies. So this is because in China, financial firms, especially banks, are not allowed to hold any equity investments in non-financial companies. Therefore, we think that fair value measurement is most likely not going to be an issue for banks. And because of this reason, the cost, implementation cost for financial firms are going to be likely be different from non-financial firms. Right. So, in order to answer our research question, we carry out two hypotheses. So, our first hypothesis is going to focus around the company's behavior related to available for sale accounts, and this is addressing the indirect implementation cost of the new standard. And we follow this line of literature that documents anytime that you have a new accounting standard, it often leads to companies changing behavior in order to prevent the new standard from negatively impacting the company's bottom line and their earnings volatility. So, following this line of research, we argue that firms are likely to also alter their behavior in order to mitigate the impact of the new CAS 22 on their company's earnings and income smoothness. And this is because, on the one hand, if an equity investment is initially classified as fair value through profit and loss, then the fluctuation in fair value is also going to be recorded in the company's profit and loss. And this is going to create a lot of undesired earnings volatility. But on the other hand, if an equity investment is initially invested or elected as fair value through other comprehensive income, then any future gains or losses other than dividend income is not going to be recorded in the company's profit and loss. And this will cause, like I mentioned previously, this will cause managers to lose a very powerful source of income. So in this case, it seems like neither of these options present a very perfect way for companies to account for their equity investments. And in addition to these arguments, before the new standard takes effect, if companies sell these available for sales accounts, they can still record the gain or losses into their current period's profit and loss. So, because of these reasons, we predict in our first hypothesis that the disposal of available for sale equity investments are going to increase following the announcement of the new standard. And then our second hypothesis focuses on audit fee increases, and this hypothesis addresses the potential direct implementation cost of the new standard. So we follow this line of literature that documents, in addition to any firm behavioral changes, new accounting regulations are also often accompanied by increased audit fees. And we argue that the new CAS 22 is also likely to introduce higher audit fees because of two reasons. First of all, we believe that eliminating the cost exception will force companies to measure all of their equity investments at fair value. And as I mentioned earlier, a lot of companies in at least in our sample involved in some sort of investments with unlisted companies without a quoted price, and this is going to create a lot of difficulties to obtain the fair value estimate. And because of this, auditors are likely to spend a lot more effort and judgment in order to verify company-provided fair value estimates, and they're likely also to charge a higher audit fee as a result. And the second reason is because companies must provide this forward-looking information related to the impairment through a loss allowance using the expected credit loss models. Because of this new expected credit loss model, auditors also need to incur more effort to understand and verify these parameters that managers use in the model, and it's likely to create a higher audit risk for auditors. So, because of these reasons, we predict in our second hypothesis that the audit fees are likely going to increase following the implementation of the new standard. So, to test our first hypothesis, we regress the natural logarithm of the total amount of available for sale on a new standard indicator. and especially this new variable is an indicator variable, and we set that equal to 1 for 2017 and after, and we set that to 0 otherwise. And we begin our analysis from 2016, which is 1 year before the announcement of the new standards, and we end it through the last year where an available for sale account is still available. So after some exclusion conditions, our final sample consists of a little over 2,600 firms with a little over 64,000 firm year observations. So our first hypothesis predicts that the beta 1 estimate in our first model to be negative. For the second hypothesis related to the increase in audit fees, we regress the natural log of total audit fees on a adoption indicator. And specifically this adopt is a variable, we set that equal to 1 for any firms that follows the new account CAS 22 in a certain year, and we set that to 0 otherwise. We do this because in our sample, we notice that there is a very small number of companies that voluntarily adopted the new CAS 22 as early as 2017. So we manually collected the adoption year from companies' annual reports, and then we compiled a sample of firms 1 year before the adoption through 1 year after the adoption. And our final sample size for this hypothesis consists a little over 5,000 firm year observations. And our prediction is that in the second model, the beta 1 coefficient is going to be positive. So the result for our first hypothesis is consistent with our prediction. Specifically, we find in a model without and then with the control variables, in both specifications, companies reduce their available for sale balances after the new standard is being announced. And this finding suggests that the companies are selling these accounts in anticipation of the new standard. And we believe that this is probably because companies would like to avoid the complication associated with the new standard. And we believe that these results provide some evidence of the indirect implementation cost of the new standard. So for our second hypothesis, we also find results consistent with our prediction. Specifically, we find that the audit fees increase after the new standard is implemented. And this is evidence of the direct implementation cost. Specifically, if we use the coefficient from our column 2, we can estimate about a 4.6% increase in the audit fees following the implementation of the new standard. So overall, both of our hypotheses are supported, and we find evidence that non-financial firms incur a substantial implementation cost because of the new financial instrument standard. We perform some additional cross-sectional analysis. So for our first hypothesis, we tested across along two aspects. So for the first aspect along state ownership, we believe that state-owned enterprises have a greater incentive to dispose of the available for sales account because these firms have a greater pressure to report smooth and satisfying earnings compared with non-state-owned enterprises. And they're also a little more short-term focused. So we find a result consistent with this prediction, particularly in this first column where we include this interaction term between our new announcement indicator and the state-owned enterprise indicator. We find that state-owned enterprises indeed dispose of the available for sale more at a higher, faster rate than non-state-owned enterprises. And in our second cross-sectional analysis, we believe that firms that either have or are planning to issue corporate bonds are going to face a much greater pressure to maintain earnings stability. So we think these firms are also going to have a greater incentive to dispose of the available for sale account than non-bond issuing firms. So in column two here, we include an interaction term between this announcement indicator and a bond issuing indicator. And we find that these firms with a bond issuance indeed dispose the available for sale a lot more than non-bond issuing firm. For our second hypothesis, we test along three cross-sectional analyses. First of all, for state-owned enterprises, we believe that because these firms are often supervised and governed by the party, and also they're likely to receive less stringent regulations, and they also have a higher internal control scores. So it's likely that auditors might increase their audit fee a lot less for state-owned firms. But we also believe that there might be some reasons to think that state-owned enterprises might be associated with more audit fee increases, since prior literature has shown that these firms have more earnings smoothing in their performance. So we let the result tell the story. And in the first column, from the interaction between the adoption indicator and the state-owned enterprise indicator, we find that state-owned enterprise experience a smaller audit fee increases after the implementation of the new standard. Secondly, we test along auditor size. So we believe that larger audit firms might need to put in more effort in their fair value estimates and their expected credit loss models in order to maintain their reputation and also provide guidance to smaller audit firms. So because of these reasons, we suspect that larger audit firms are going to be associated with a larger audit fee increase. And we indeed find this result consistent with our prediction in the second column here. And then lastly, we test along by the total account balance affected by the new standard. So we believe that firms that have a higher account balance affected by the new standards are going to have a lot more workload and challenges at risk for auditors. And because of these reasons, we predict that these firms are also going to be associated with a higher audit fee increase. And we measure this impact of the new standard by adding up the available for sale recorded at cost under the original standard, along with the total receivables and the total debt instruments, and we scale this sum by the total asset. So from the result, we do find that these firms with larger balances do incur a higher audit fee increases. Okay, so let me quickly go over our robustness test. We confirm, first of all, that our first hypothesis result is not driven by any scaling issue. And second, in a subsample of Shenzhen stock exchange firms, which are required to disclose the total amount of available for sale purchases and sales, in addition to the net balances, we find that these firms are more likely to engage in net sales of available for sale account following the announcement of the new standard. So this finding shows that our result for H1 is not driven by fair value changes, but is driven by the available for sale sales. And for the second hypothesis, we confirm that our results are still holding after we adjust the audit fees by consumer price index. And we also rule out an alternative explanation that firms with financial misconduct could be driving our results. Overall, our study provides some empirical evidence of the implementation cost of the IFRS 9 for non-financial firms. And we document that firms increase the amount of available for sale sales following the announcement of the new standards. And this effect is more pronounced for state-owned enterprises and firms issuing any corporate bonds. We also find that after the new standard is implemented, companies pay a considerably higher amount of audit fees, and the audit fee increase is also larger for non-state-owned enterprises, bigger auditors, and also firms that has a higher account balance affected by the new standards. We believe that our paper offers some very important policy implications. So the findings in our paper points out to the importance of recognizing the difficulty in accessing acquiring fair value. And the findings also suggest that the implementation cost of the new standards may be significantly lower for non-financial firms if the cost exception is not fully eliminated. In addition, because debt equity investment accounts for only a very small percentage of the financial instruments held by non-financial firms in our sample, we believe that changing the loss allowance estimation model from the incurred credit loss to the expected credit loss model doesn't really make a huge difference on the impairment reserve, but it does come at a very high price. So perhaps the implementation costs for non-financial firms might be a lot lower if the expected credit loss model is not mandated. And then lastly, even though our study is conducted in a Chinese setting, our theoretical motivation and the empirical analysis are not driven or unique to any Chinese-specific features. So we believe that our research conclusions are not limited to the Chinese market, and we can also have some global implications as well. And with that, I conclude my presentation, and I look forward to your discussions and questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Savannah, for your excellent presentation. I'll just remind everyone to keep your microphone on mute whilst the speakers are talking. We have an academic discussant, Jenny Wang from the University of Wollongong. Welcome, Jenny. Jenny got her PhD from the University of Waikato, if I say that right. She is both a qualitative and quantitative researcher. So welcome, Jenny. You have 15 minutes.
Thank you, Tom, for your introduction. Thank you, everyone, for giving me the opportunity to discuss the paper. I think now I'm going to share my screen. Oh, sorry, Tom. So I cannot share my screen with everyone. So I think
there's an arrow next to the top right hand corner. There's an upward arrow next to the microphone. Yeah, that's not working.
Yeah, stop working. I think I can't.
Control Shift E.
Yeah, I click that, but nothing happened. Okay.
I've shared your screen,
thank you.
Thank you. I can move the slides for you.
Thank you very much, Gloria. Okay, thank you everyone for giving me this opportunity to discuss this paper. But actually, I start from the title. So this paper, the title of the paper is the implementation cost of IFRS 9 for non-financial firms, evidence from China. So, but actually when I read the paper, I've been thinking about there's a lot of companies adopt this IFRS 9. for non, you know, IFRS 9, not only China. So, but actually you can see not for all of the countries that they'll increase the accounting costs or audit fees. So that's why I think probably for this whole paper, they focus on, you know, the situation in China. So I probably prefer the title would be changed as the implementation cost of IFRS 9 for non-financial firms in China. Not evidence from China, because I think that's the situation only fit in China, not for all of other countries. So I will talk about these details in next slides. Okay, so yeah, actually this paper, I think that's very useful, and also that's very interesting topic, because I think in China, because of this adoption of IFRS 9 in China, so there's a lot of, you know, discussions about this problem, including the academics and you know, the managers in the company. So that's why I think it's really worthwhile doing topic. Okay, so next slide. Thank you, Gloria. Okay, so thank you very much. So first of all, you can see in the abstract, you know, the paper mentioned this you can see this paper mentioned this the disposal of AFS is more prominent in state-owned enterprises, SOE, and the firms issuing corporate bonds. That's in the abstract. However, in the introduction session, so there's no any discussions or introductions about you know, what is the state-owned enterprises and the non, you know, state-owned enterprises, so that's not mentioned. So probably I would suggest you to introduce, because you are going to compare, you know, the effect for these two different types of companies. So that's why maybe, you know, a little bit introduce the difference between these two types of enterprises. So next one is this paper claims, the previous one, yeah. So this paper claims the new standards do not provide a specific guidance without detailed guidance, implementation errors, and even earning manipulation are likely to occur. That's on page 3, okay? But however, so when we talk about the detailed guidance or detailed instructions for IFRS 9, so we need to think about, you know, for this, you know, different systems in China and other countries. So China is a rule-based country. Definitely we need to, when we adopt IFRS, so we need some detailed instruction. However, this IFRS 9 come from, you know, I mean, most of the members from IASB, from, you know, the developing country. So that's from the Anglo-Saxon country. When they design the, you know, the IFRS 9, the accounting standards, so that's from principle-based country. So which means, I think for IFRS 9, that's principle-based accounting standards, that's enough for those Anglo-Saxon countries. So that's why when we, in China, when we adopt this IFRS 9, so which means that that's new accounting standards. So for those details or for these rules, the accountants need or auditors need, so we need to fix the Chinese culture and the Chinese accounting standards or Chinese system. So that's why we need more information there, but not only mention the IFRS 9, no details guidance. That's because that's principle-based accounting standards. Yeah. Okay, next slide. And also in the introduction on page 4, they mentioned the adoption of new standards IFRS 9 affect accounting costs and audit costs. And also this paper investigated whether the answers to these questions depends on firm or auditor characteristics. But here I would like to mention the whole evaluation system in China, because you know, we only mentioned the firm or auditor characteristics, and also there's lack of the evaluation evaluation systems. Okay, because you can see in New Zealand or in Australia, those countries, so we adopt, you know, we use the fair value measurement. It doesn't matter. That's because, you know, for the whole system, we always use fair value. And also for those countries, we have very good evaluation systems. Okay, so for example, like for the property market, like every 3 years in New Zealand, they evaluate the value of the property for all of the properties in New Zealand. Okay, so they have a CV, we call that CV. And then the market price could be higher than CV or could be less than CV, but actually that's a provider guidance. So that's the evaluation system in New Zealand, Australia. However, in China, there's no such kind of evaluation system. So that's why when we adopt IFRS 9 in China, so all of the, you know, the companies or accountants or auditors, they feel headache because they don't know how to evaluate the fair value, how to pick up the fair value, how to use it, especially for unlisted companies. You know, for listed companies in the stock market, they can use the, you know, the market price. However, for the unlisted companies, so they feel, oh my God, what going to do? So that's why in this situation, probably we should mention the evaluation system a little bit in the introduction. And also this study indicates the implementation cost of the new standard may be significantly lower for non-financial firm if the cost exception maybe significantly lower for non-financial firm if the cost exception is not fully eliminated and the cost can be used to replace fair value when there is no cost of an equity in the active market. That's on page 6, okay? But actually, I think that's the purpose that we use IFRS 9, not the previous accounting standards. Why? That's because in China, we get used to use cost because no one can change cost. So for managers or accountants, auditors, when they use cost, they feel safe, they feel secure. However, when we use a fair value, so they don't know how to do. But actually, for the new accounting standards, if the cost exceptions is used, so I'm pretty sure there's a lot of companies that will use the cost in China, not fair value. So I think it's pretty much like the previous accounting standards. So that's not purpose for the new standards. Okay, so I think that's not always the question, for all of the in the world. That's only the particular situation for China. So like New Zealand or Australia, I think they don't have this kind of problem. So that's why in the introduction, when you mention this situation, probably you should mention in China, this situation in China. Okay, next one. Thank you, Gloria. So for this empirical model, actually there's no session to describe the control variables, but how you pick the control variables. I know there's, you know, the model's been set up, but how you pick the control variables and how you justify the control variables. If there are separate session to discuss the control variables, that would be great. And also the data mentioned, from 2016, 1 year before the new CAS 22, okay? But have you considered about any outliers? Because only 1 year before that, and then you're going to make comparison with the, you know, the data after this new accounting standards, but only 1 year, do you think that's enough or more than 1 year that would be better? Okay, so to reduce the situation, okay? So next slide. And the last thing I would like to mention is, you know, the paper. I found out for this paper, there's some, the students, there are some grammar mistakes. So if you can get this paper proofread by an editor, that will be better, and that will improve the paper a lot. And also in the whole paper, so as I mentioned before, so the whole situation you mentioned that's in general, so that's why you mentioned that will increase accounting costs, so increase the audit fees. But actually, that's not for all of the country, as I mentioned, like in New Zealand, Australia, they maybe not the case. So that's why for that sentence, so very conform. So probably it's better you just put in China. Okay, that will increase the cost in China. And also in the whole paper, there's a lot of maybe those words being used, but actually that will weak the, you know, the whole sentence. So if, because we have the data and we test the hypothesis, so that's why we need to, you know, convince. So that's why try to avoid using those words, maybe, okay, especially in the conclusion session. Okay, I think that's all for my discussion. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Jenny. Susanna, I will give you a chance to respond, after the ISB discussion, so you can respond to them both. It's now my pleasure to introduce the IASB discussant. It's Zheng Xiaolu. He is a member of the IASB. Prior to that, was at the Ministry of Finance, and has a PhD from Shanghai University of Finance and Economics.
Thanks, Tom. Let me share my slide. Oh, no, not this one. I lost God. Okay, have you ever seen my screen?
Yes, we can.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. It's really an honor and a privilege to participate this year's IFI's research forum, and I really enjoy reading all those papers. On this paper, not only this paper, and as well as other papers. Particularly after long board week. And I think this is a very good paper, and I think the research conducted by the authors, are really timely, because currently the ISB is doing, PII of IFRS 9, particularly classification and measurement part. So we are really looking at the effect of applying IFRS 9, and also we are looking at some specific accounting areas, for example the accounting treatment for equity investment. So I think the researching findings some may have some implications to ISB. For example, the research showed that companies' behavior in terms of equity investment are changing because of the specific accounting treatment for those investment, and it also showed that auditing fees seems increased because of implementation of IFRS 9. Obviously, it's not a surprise, because when the board developed those proposals, we expect some cost increase. So. In terms of the contribution of this paper, I think the paper contributes to the literature by examining the implementation cost of IFRS 9 in China. Obviously, China is the second largest capital market worldwide, and a lot of, you know, international investor invest money in Chinese capital market. So I think looking at the implementation experience of IFRS standards in China really have the broader implications for users, for other stakeholders. And also I mentioned that this research will contribute to our PIR of IFRS 9. And another thing I'm thinking about is that whether, you know, maybe you know, this paper will also contribute to literature on whether, you know, accounting standards have economic consequences or not. Because it really reminded me a very famous paper article written by Stephen Zeff in 1978. That is the result, the rise of the economic consequences, when he talked about the relationship between those, you know, companies' behavior, companies', you know, activities, and the accounting standard, particularly those controversial standards. So in terms of this standard, particularly because the paper look at the behavior after this announcement of IFRS 9 in terms of selling those equity investment. So there is a question coming out whether the accounting treatment will have some impact on long-term investment activities. But this is a question. Some people also are asking this question, but we need evidence. We need solid evidence to look at this issue. But I do have some, you know, some observations and the suggestion, maybe some questions, you know. First, the question is about whether the implemented cost increase solely came from IFRS 9. First thing I would like to clarify, actually to correct is that in China, IFRS 15 also became effective on January 1st, 2018 for those dual listed companies. So this fact has to be considered in the research from my perspective. Secondly, IFRS 16 also became effective on January 1st, 2019. I think many companies actually started to prepare to implement this standard years, or at least 1 year before the standard became effective. So maybe their additional cost will occur in 2018, maybe in 2017. So this is another factor I think maybe we need to consider. The second question I have is that what's the motivation or the reasons of those bigger sales of available for sale equity, you know, investment after the announcement of the new financial instrument standard? The reason why I ask is that I'm thinking that whether those selling really came from the new accounting standard, or whether there are any economic incentive behind that. Because when I look at the security markets performance in 2017 and 2018, it seemed that in 2017, Chinese stock market performed very well. But starting from January, you know, 2018, it's not very well. Why? I think one of the reasons, because of uncertainty of the Chinese capital market, you know, resulting from US and China trade war. Because I think starting from at the end of the second half of 2017, there is an expectation, seems that the uncertainty between China and US relationship arising. So I can imagine if rational investors may they may decide to sell and to keep the money, you know, in 2017, rather keep that money until 2018. I think this is another factor maybe we need to consider. Second thing is that although there are more than 94% of those non-financial listed companies have those, you know, equity instruments accounted at cost. But I really would like to look at the composition of the whole bunch of available sale or equity investment, whether there are any evidence can show that those assets actually are for sale assets or those assets are for dividend assets, whether those assets sold are really for sale assets, not for dividend assets, or whether those companies are sell those for dividend assets as well. And another aspect I would like to look at is that the paper said that companies are concerned about the cost arising from those equity investments without unquoted, you know, price. Because IFRS, you know, IFRS 13 fair value measurement has already adopted in China for actually before IFRS 9. So I can imagine many companies may disclose how they measure the fair value of equity investment, particularly after IFRS 9. So maybe there are detailed information about level 1, level 2, level 3 assets, or maybe those information actually available before IFRS 9 adopted. So I really would like to look at what kind of assets they are selling and what kind of assets they are holding, whether level 1 or level 2, level 3 particularly. So I think those look at the portions of those different category of the equity investment maybe also help us to explain the reasons behind of those, you know, sale activities or holding activities. So this is the second question in my mind. The third question is that whether the auditing fee increases are simply due to the implementation of IFRS 9. Because the paper said that actually it's right, because for dual list companies, they adopted the IFRS 9 in 2018. But for those purely Asia companies, purely domestic listed companies, they 1 year ahead to apply IFRS 9. So I wonder whether it's possible to examine and compare the auditing fee increases of those, you know, between those dual listed companies and domestic listed companies in 2018 to show whether the auditing fee increase really came from implementation of IFRS 9. I'm also interested in whether it's possible to look at from broader, you know, time window to examine whether average auditing fee growth rate in recent years, you know, whether it's what kind of auditing fee growth rate average, you know, from average you know rate perspective to look at, because the article showed there is a significant increase auditing fee rate about I think more than 4%, but I think we need to compare the average auditing fee growth rate as well in recent years. And another aspect I'm looking at is that when the ISB decide those proposals, those accounting treatment, we always look at, not only look at the cost, we also look at the benefit. And we obviously we will analyze the cost and the benefits of all of the proposals, and to make sure that the benefits outweigh the costs. So I also thinking about that, maybe looking at the implementation cost of IFRS 9 is not sufficient. I wonder whether it's possible to look at the benefit as well. And for example, about accounting policy for available for sale equity instrument, the changing from available sale category to maybe to fair value through OCI or maybe fair value through P&L. The board's proposal, the intention is they try to reduce the earnings management, try to improve the transparency and the capability, try to better reflect the investment purpose, strategy, and the company's performance. I think those benefits needed to be examined and to compare to the cost, whether could be justified, whether those costs could be justified. So this is another aspect we can look at it. And finally, I do have a question why the scope of this research only focus on non-financial entities, because from board perspective, we expect adoption IFRS 9 actually have more, significant impact on those financial entities than those non-financial entities. So hopefully, I think we also can look at those financial entities, what's the cost they have, what kind of benefits they get, particularly, actually, financial entities, I acknowledge their Chinese banks may have some restrictions to invest in share market, but how about other financial entities? For example, as I know that insurance companies invest a lot of money in equity market, and previously they classify some equity instruments in the available sale category. I think this area we also needed to look at to give a whole picture of the cost and the benefits arising from implementing IFRS 9. So that's all. I think all my comments, maybe some questions to the authors. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Before we start the Q&A in proper, I'm going to give Savannah a chance to respond to both discussions. Savannah, I'm a bit of a referee and discussant whisperer, so I'll sum up the comments. They loved your paper. They really loved your paper. They want to see more, maybe even two extra papers, one that looks at monetizing the benefits and one that also does a study on financials. So they can't get enough of it. They love your paper. So if you want to make a response, feel free, then we can open it up for general Q&A.
Hi. Savannah asked me to answer several questions first. First, I introduce myself. I'm Jianfang Ye from Shanghai University of Finance Economics. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Jianqiao. Thanks, Jenny. Give us a very good suggestion. So first of all, Jenny's question, I only answer several, and others, Savannah will answer the question. First one for about evaluation system mentioned by Jenny. As I know, even United States, level 3 fair value measurement also has problem, difficult. I don't think Australia have no problem. I think we have no problem for level 1, maybe we have no problem for level 2, but all country has problem for level 3 measurement. That's my answer for evaluation system. Yeah, no one is perfect. Okay, so that's about evaluation system. No one is absolutely have no problem. Second is about whether we want, so Jenny mentioned about this, about old. New doesn't mean good. Old doesn't mean bad. But definitely new one has good points. New one has maybe has disappointment, disadvantage, still have problem. So we don't want to say old. Our paper also mentioned some new accounting. We fully agree. So that's reason my our paper was before the title is about all cooperation, but we found as Jian Chao mentioned, actually IFRS 9 is for mostly for financial industry, financial cooperation. So that was reason our paper changed the title to non-financial firm, because we don't want to IFRS 9 affect non-financial cooperation lots, because IFRS 9 mainly for financial. So why put everyone to the track? So that's our paper's argument. So our paper doesn't want to mention everything, because as Tom said, that's about several papers, not only one paper. Okay, so that's about Jenny's question. Second, it's about Tom's question. Not Tom, sorry. Jian Chao's question. Tom has no question. Okay, Jian Chao's question. Jian Chao mentioned about the cost may be IFRS 15, maybe it's IFRS 16. But as we know, IFRS 9 in China, Asia works first, 1980. And IFRS 15, 1920. IFRS 16, 1921. So we can use only Asia data to say, so that we can convince better than put A plus share together. So I think that we can use that data just solely only domestic listed, because revenue accounting standard 2 years later and leave 3 years later. I don't think auditor can charge. They did it the 3 years the work. I don't think so. So only they can charge the year they worked. So we can use Asia data, only Asia data that can convince that cost of auditing fee because of IFRS 9. So that's the first question. And the second, held for sale and held for dividend. It's really hard to know which one is held for sale, which one is held for dividend, as we don't know the every corporation's detail. So because even corporations, they can change mind. They can change from held for dividend because the market so bad, so finally they sold it. So that looks like impractical for us to say which one is held for sale, which one is held for dividend. So just look at the shareholder of bank in China. Changes as well. So bank investors usually held for dividend, but stock market was so bad, it's so bad for bank. So people change mind sometimes. So that's the second question. So it's really hard to know everyone, but for one corporation, we can interview and then we can know, but for all corporations, it's really hard. And 3.1 is about, okay, we found the level one sale, because level two, level three is hard to sell. So level one. Level one, they usually holding, and now they feel the accounting stand affect them, but doesn't bad. Sealed for available for sales doesn't mean bad. Why? Because Jian Chao mentioned about whether for future, because we are working another paper and hope we can send the paper to the IFRS and FASB research forum next year. We are working more about future. That's about future we are working. And for, okay, Jian Chao also suggests us to test about insurance cooperation. As I know, all insurance cooperation in China, except Ping An, they use IFRS 9. It use IFRS 9. All other insurance corporation, they still have not used IFRS 9. The reason is IFRS 9 allowed insurance corporation use IFRS 9 until insurance accounting standard effective. So it's impossible for us to test insurance corporation because they still have not used IFRS 9. So looks like that question I can answer. I noted and I can answer. And all other questions of Yuan Yuan, Savannah, please answer. Thanks all of you. Give us chance. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Jennifer.